Cynthia Lambert. She's the co-director of the Center of Excellence in Workforce Research and Policy at the University of Kentucky. She is also the past chair of the National Public Health Leadership Development Network. She has over 30 years of experience in public health and human resource fields. In her role at the University of Kentucky, she oversees all workforce development and community engagement for the college. She, and most of you may know, Dr. Douglas Scutchfield, directs the National Coordinating Center for the Public Health Services and Systems Research. She has her BS in English and Communications from Wright State University and completed her coursework for her MBA at Wright State. She also holds her MPH from the University of Kentucky College of Public Health. Please welcome Cynthia Lambert.
Hopefully I can fit all this up there. I truly, as an environmental professional, try to go paperless, so my notes are here. So sometimes that works, sometimes that doesn't, but anyway. Thanks for being here. Gosh, the room is packed. There's a lot of interest in this. I'm surely anxious to hear more of your questions, and it's interesting. We were having a discussion before we started today about why we're even doing this, and obviously the fact that the room is full is a testament to the interest that this has right now. So I'm going to talk about the surveillance system that was mentioned earlier. We didn't talk about, you know, should we just be doing a great big survey and try to figure out who's out there? But the thought was, you know, we already gather so much data, and maybe we should take a cue from our epidemiologist friends and look at a surveillance system. And so we could look at many different pieces of the system to come up with an enumeration of the workforce. So I have no relationships, at least that I'm going to talk about in front of the microphone. And you've already been told what our funding sources are from Angela. We are sister centers of excellence that pursue this enumeration. So what I want to talk to you about, the University of Kentucky does have the responsibility for overseeing the National Advisory Committee. We do have just the one committee that provides guidance to the two centers. I want to talk about our problem statement, why we're doing this, the objectives, the methodology. I'll go into a little bit more detail on the case definition, but I won't be going into the data sources. That's how Angela and I decided to kind of split this up, and our findings and recommendations. So these are our project officers, some of which are in the room today. You already met Captain Masoudi. Fatima Coronado is not with us today. Ed Salzberg is not here, is he? Oh, he's presenting something else right now. That's what you do. And of course, Nadra is our moderator today. So I wanted to put this list up of the people that we've been working with. We went and we tried to come up with, you know, some people that have done a lot of work in enumeration in the past, some people that we felt were definitely experts in this area that could help us think through this problem of figuring out who does the work, what is it they do, how do we characterize it. And of course, a lot of that is necessary because we want to be able to impact policy. Right now, public health professionals are making a lot of difficult decisions. And we know there are reductions in the workforce, and you're going to hear about that from one of my colleagues here in a little bit, and that the impact of that. But it's particularly for as researchers, we need to know what the workforce is. So these are some of the folks that we have on the National Advisory Committee. Peter Bierhaus from Vanderbilt, Claude Earl Fox, who's now at the University of Miami, was formerly at HRSA, Bill Keck from Northeast Ohio, Hugh Tilson, who's in the room with us today. Shout out to Hugh. David Meltzler from University of Chicago, Jackie Merrill, who's done a lot of work in enumeration. Henry Montes from the APHA Education Board, Deborah Perez from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and you just heard about the investments they're making in these things, particularly with the nursing workforce in the coming years. George Stamis from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and we did have Linda Bilheimer working with us when she was at CDC, but now that she's gone to the Congressional Budget Office, she's no longer participating for obvious conflict of interest reasons. So. Not that we wouldn't like to have her influencing our budget, right, Mayron? So the problem statement here is that we need to develop and maintain a competent workforce. And what does that mean? Competencies. It's right there in the world. And I have it also in bullet number 3. And that is, in addition to just counting who we have out there, we do need to somehow characterize what it is people do and what competencies they need to do that. And this gets into an aspirational goal at this point, and that is, this is something that we'll probably be looking at, not even maybe this year, but partially, or you know, the year after, when we try to tie this to competencies. So we're looking at enumeration and surveillance. One of the things that we have in mind about this project is that if we have a surveillance system, we can put our hand on that pulse as it exists today. So in other words, you know, if we're not saying, oh, well, this is the survey that was done in 2000, and then this is the survey that was done in 2011. It's not real helpful, is it? The researchers in the room are going to shake their head. It doesn't help us. So if we can have a surveillance system, we have more contemporary data. So what we did was we outlined our options, okay? And basically, we want this to be a sustainable system. Well, that's always an important word. We want to have a replicable plan for enumeration. So we may not be the people that are doing this several years from now. We want to determine the desired data elements, which Angela just talked about. And so we did an environmental scan of all these data sources, which is how we came up with that list. And you know, from there you saw the results of what we think is useful. So we assessed the usability of the data. Basically what we're looking at there, you know, what's missing, what's not available. We had formal recommendations for a proposed surveillance system and ongoing enumeration, and these were all vetted with our stakeholders, with our national advisory group, and we came up with this set of recommendations that, again, you saw in Angela's presentation. But the first thing that we did, and what I'm going to talk a little bit more, has to do with the case definition and then the comprehensive review, and then the next steps will be the last thing that I talk about with you all. So the case definition does focus on a subset of workers that are employed in local, state, and federal government agencies. We did a comprehensive review of the data sources to determine whether existing data sources could be used to use for this enumeration and establish a surveillance system and long-term monitoring. So one of the questions that we asked was not only what data is available right now, but will it continue to be available? So, you know, you're going to hear from both ASTO and NACHO in a little while, and we certainly hope that they, you know, have the funding to continue to do their surveys that they do on a regular basis. But to be quite honest with you, a lot of the data sources that we looked at do not have that kind of guarantee, if you will, that they'll be able to continue to ask those questions. And so that is a possible flaw in our system, is that the data may not be continuously available. So let's jump into this case definition in a little bit more detail. So the Centers of Excellence, along with the federal partners, and I'll be honest with you, these were very spirited conversations. The reality is we don't want to leave anybody out. We want to count everyone, and we don't want to diminish anyone's role by not including them in the case definition. But the reality is that we have a deliverable to do within a year or a two-year period of time, and so we had to figure out which categories we had information on so that we could use them for the enumeration. And then I'm going to talk to you about how we plan to expand that pool in the future. So we came up with a definition that's all individuals that provide any of the 10 essential public health services who are employed in the following venues. So we looked at traditional state, territorial, and local governmental public health agencies and departments. And we have several resources to find those numbers, although we're finding that it's not as easy as we thought it would be, right? federal agencies with a clear mandate to provide public health services, This gets very fuzzy in certain areas, particularly like in environmental health. You know, there are a lot of different agencies, and we have to figure out which ones are public health. Non-public health, state, local, federal government agencies that provide environmental health services, and non-public health state, local, or federal government agencies that provide public health laboratory services. And, you know, these are based on Christine Gebbie's enumeration in 2000. I don't want you to think we threw the baby out with the bathwater in this process. We spent actually a lot of time looking at that. Her study used 55 occupational titles that were adapted by the Center for Health Policy at Columbia from a taxonomy of titles that were developed by HRSA. And those titles, you know, then, in other words, it also included the Bureau of Labor Statistics standard operational classifications that we've talked about, the SOCs, which were linked to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission and the OPM occupational categories. And so all of this was done in 2000, and so we studied that enumeration very closely to come up with the categories that we identified for our case definition. And then we vetted that with our partners at NACHO and ASTO, and it actually went through four or five cycles before we came up with the final case definition. So I don't want you to think that this was done lightly. So these are some of the occupational classifications. We saw this same slide earlier. If you have questions about that, I'll go back to it in a little bit. These are the people who aren't included. This is probably the most sensitive thing, and I just, like I said, I really kind of hate putting this up here because I want to include all these people. Anyone would want to, but we are not including community health workers. We're not including faculty and students in schools and programs of public health. We're not including public health workers in private settings, Medicaid workers, tribal public health workers, volunteers, school health workers. And that would be school health workers who are not employed by the governmental agency. There's a caveat there. Public health workers providing clinical and population health services. So these are some of the folks that we know are left out of the definition. And I do want to talk about a couple caveats with what we're calling undercounted or not counted and overcounted or double counted. We do see that with federal non-civilian, we're going to see the, issues with undercounting or not counting. Huge number of contract workers. Anybody in here a contract worker? Wow, that's surprising. You know, this is how we have enough bodies to do the work that we need to do that we don't have a position for. So the contracted workers. Are one of the areas. So, on the federal workers, the OPM provides data for civilian employees only. If they served in the Commissioned Corps, they're not included in these numbers. At the present, the publicly available data source hasn't been identified that can provide all this information, and so we're actually, to be honest with you, tossing that back to our friends sitting here in the front row at HRSA and CDC to look at that. So we also have state and local governmental public health workers. The ASTO survey garnered that 92% at a 92% response rate in 2010, and NACHO achieved an 82% response rate. And we're going to hear from those surveys as far as a large proportion of the health departments and the and workers, but we don't know what might be missing, and they're going to talk more about that. We do know that there are some areas, and there's this whole other category that I know I've had conversations with Carolyn about trying to figure out what that is. So in the environmental health workers, and you know, this is my field, so this one's very sensitive to me. Sometimes environmental health is in the health department, sometimes it's in a whole nother federal agency. And so the information about the environmental public health workers at state and local health departments is captured in ASTO and NACHO, And I'd really love to see NEHA do a survey, but at the present time, there's not a funding mechanism to do that. But it would be nice if that professional organization did that as well. And then we have a issue with laboratory workers. ASCO collects data on laboratory workers. However, they can be employed by governmental agencies that are non-traditional, such as agricultural labs, which would not be included at the ASCO survey. And then the overcounted and double-counted people, Washington, D.C., right, and health department workers and federal civilian workers are also an area where we think we might be double-counting those workers. So see, these are some of the problems that we're running into. And so I do want to say that we do have a plan to expand the case definition as we work on this, and that would be phase one is where we are now, which is the core governmental public health workers. Phase two would be the missed governmental workers, the community health workers, public health faculty, students, expanded occupation. Phase three would include the tribal workers in private agency and healthcare systems, and then phase four could include the volunteer and school-based workers. And you know, I can't guarantee we'll ever get to that point. This is aspirational that we would like to be able to include all of these folks. And of course, a lot of this is contingent on us having access to the data, and of course the money to do this. So our recommendations is that identify a working group to come up with a surveillance system. In the next year, both University of Michigan, University of Kentucky are going to continue on our quest to identify some of these sources. Basically, we want to work with our federal partners who are looking at the federal workforce, assist the public health organizations, you know, such as ASTO and NACHO and NEHA and others to do this, the dentist and so forth, and to produce enumeration estimates. And I'm going to use the word estimate because we are going to come out with numbers, but I don't think we'll ever be precise. But I think if we can all agree that this is the number we're going to use, and we all do our projections, and we all do our research based on those similar numbers, that we'll get to the point we need to be as far as advocacy and policy changes. So we also think that we'll get to modeling at some point once we have these enumeration numbers. So I have one reference, and before I stop talking, I do want to acknowledge that my doctoral candidate, Robin Penley, is in the audience, and she is really the one who does all of this work. And so I'm just saying that because that way if you ask me questions I don't know the answers to, she'll answer. So questions from y'all? Yes. You mean how we're going to do that? I guess what I'm trying to say is that once we have these core numbers, you know, we can make some forecasting projections by creating models, and we also could create models that would identify the gaps or the public health workers that aren't fulfilling, and we'll also see differences in, you know, like staffing ratios, those kinds of things. So that's really what I'm talking about. So, yes, Jo.
Depth for the BLS or any of the other surveillance potential tools.
Yeah. Yeah, to be real honest with you, probably some of the richest data that we have right now is from the ASTO and Natural Surveys, which are going to be the next two presenters. But, yeah. Other questions before I sit down and let them? Yeah, right up here. The federal non-civilian employees? Okay. Employees who serve in Commissioned Corps are not included. That's one of the undercounting issues. So we're not counting Captain Masoudi. And so anybody that has a uniform on and that's in the public health service would not be included. That was probably the biggest thing that we identified. What was the second half of your question? The other thing is that in the information for the entire Department of Health and Human Services and the Environmental Protection Agency workforce, that's where if we look at those numbers, then we're overcounting because we're including everybody that's in HRSA and EPA numbers. And that would be people who really don't fall under our case definition of providing the 10 essential services. So that's why we identified those as an overcount. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
I'm just wondering if you consider state QIO employees to be public health workforce, or do they fall under the clinical services?
I have no idea what we did with those. Do you all?
I'm sorry, quality improvement organizations, state surveyors of healthcare facilities, and other Medicare, Medicaid funded.
Yeah, I don't think we, those are not part of our case definition. Okay, we'll be here. There's more to come.
And I think Mayron and I know that people are like, why not us? Why not the community health workers? So it's all about where can you find the data, and it's just not rich data. And I know you were responding to the one about the Corps. The Corps has a whole separate human resource system. So if you're not tracking your they track their personnel a lot different than the federal civilian workforce. So that's kind of how you get into the difficulty of it.